Well, hello, everybody out there. This is the 14th in the series, weekly series of Pandemic Open Mic Mondays. And it's a heat wave here in Portland, Oregon, and in many other parts of the U.S. and the Northern Hemisphere generally. And an area the size of Greece is on fire in Siberia at the moment, and there's forest fires actually burning within the city of Portland recently. It's been very smoky around here, along with all the tear gas downtown. And federal agents are roaming the streets and picking people off and disappearing them for who knows how long, hours, who knows if it's more. Hopefully they know somebody. Interesting times. And I just thought I'd sing a little public service announcement before we turn it over to participants. And if you are, if you signed up to participate in this or another open mic, then you should have received an email about that says open mic at the top of the hour in the subject line. If it's not in your inbox, it might be in your spam folder. And yeah, there's Paul McKenna just appeared. Wonderful. And if anybody else, we got Steve DC, Stephen McRandall, and Paul McKenna coming right up after me. And then if anybody else has not signed up but you want to participate, just send me a message through one of these platforms. You know, email me or Facebook or Twitter, whatever you're on. And I'll try to check my messages or, you know, make a comment there on whatever platform you're watching on and say, hey, send me the link so I can sign up. And you can just sign up. You don't need to do it all in advance. But if you want to, it's the sign up sheet, as it were, is at davidrovics.com/POMM for Pandemic Open Mic Mondays. And here's a little public service announcement, good for any occasion these days. Wear a mask, for any task, especially if you're indoors or there's not much space from my face to yours. If you care, then you wear a barrier of some kind between your face and mine. Over time, you will find it's just about as hard as remembering your credit card. Go on strike, as you like, but out there on the picket line, keep some space between the signs. Go to the mall, have a ball, but if you're there to shop or loot the place, don't forget to cover your face. Sanitize, watch out for spies, undercover cops, provocateurs, divide and conquer connoisseurs. Drive a tank, rob a bank, just make sure you dress appropriately as you walk off with the money. Go downtown, and burn down the police station, but be wise and wash the tear gas from your eyes. Yes, wear a mask. That's Wear a Mask by me. And switch this into the computer so I can hear guests, and then I will move over here to Windsor, Ontario. Steve.
Hello.
Lovely to see you again.
It's lovely to be here again.
How's things?
I love the PSA that you shared. Things are good. Okay. I'm so happy. I'm happy because the Hurricane Hanna, which ordinarily would be a very awful thing, blew down Trump's wall last night, which is not what this song is about. But anyway.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, it blew down
His wall. The wall somewhere in Arizona or something?
Where was it?
Texas.
There's a YouTube video of it blowing over.
The whole thing?
Enough of it to make me laugh. and the only thing it made me think of is Robert Frost.
Yeah, there's some poem. Silver linings.
Robert Frost poem, Mending Wall. So anyhow, I don't know if I ever told you this, David, but I have a bachelor's degree in electrical engineering and a master's degree in something called electronics and computer control system. And in order to do that, I took my own SATs, and I had to take a lot of tests along the way. And so I really understand the anxiety, but also the pride and accomplishment of like passing or acing a test. So I wrote this song, and it's a very emotional song, and it's about that feeling you get when you pass a test. And it's called Cognitively There. Person, woman, man, camera, TV, person, woman, man, camera, TV. The first questions are very easy. The last ones are more difficult. Like a memory question, it's like you go person, woman, man, camera, TV. So that say, can you repeat that? So I said, yeah. So it's person, woman, man, camera, TV, person, woman, man, camera, TV. And now he's asking other questions, and then 20 minutes later they'd say, can you give us that again? Do you remember that first question? Not the first, but the 10. Give us that again. Can you do that again? And you go. You go, person, woman, man, camera, TV, person, woman, man, camera, TV. And they say, that's amazing. And they say, how did you do that? Nobody gets them in order. It's not that easy. I do it because I have a good memory. Because I'm cognitively there. I'm cognitively there. A very stable genius. Cognitively there. I have the biggest words. I'm cognitively there. Have a good memory, cognitively there. I'm cognitively there. I'm cognitively there.
Yeah, excellent. It's a sad song about a terrifying subject.
Yes.
Thanks for joining us, Steve.
Yes, it's G.W. Bush says, it's a terrible thing to waste your mind.
Right. What was it? A mind is a terrible thing to waste, but he got the quote wrong, right?
Yeah, he always said, Bushisms, he said, it's a terrible thing to waste your mind.
That's right.
Thank you so much.
He'd know. Thank you. And moving along to Dublin, Ireland. Mr. McRandall, how are you holding up?
Still kicking, Dave. Still kicking. How's yourself?
Yeah, good. Haven't been picked off the street yet and arrested, so I'm good. Yeah.
That's great to know. You weren't on at some point last week. I was looking for a thing on you, and I didn't find it. And then I thought, fuck, has he got arrested or what?
Yeah. Look for the white van. Yeah.
Yeah.
What is it with the white van? That's what they used to. That's what the secret police from the British secret police used to arrest people in Dublin. I remember they had white vans. They would snatch somebody off the streets on occasion in the 80s. They also used white vans, if I recall. And white vans in Sri Lanka. What's the thing with white vans? I guess they're easily available.
I guess
to rent.
Yeah, they used them around here, actually, when they followed us, just a security firm, when they were following us for the water meter charge. Just what the story is. But we actually did a thing in sympathy with you lot, for the people of Portland, or solidarity with the people of Portland down in Dublin here.
Nice, how's that?
It was okay. It was only about 100 people, and then there was about 500 kind of right-wing guys that we were trying to explain that they shouldn't be saying the things that they're saying. The guards came between us, like, fuck, was like, there was only 100 of us, you know, there was about 500.
Where did these right wingers come from? Who are they?
They're pretty confused lot. They were anti-mask, and they were anti-chlorine in your water, and they were Irish first, you know, some kind of...
Wow.
But I think they're pretty confused bunch. They didn't, like, I think they get them under the thing of like housing for people, and then all these other things that pull up, like this Irish first and shit like that there. So yeah, but it was just unpleasant. Mm-hmm. 500 guys around you shouting nasty stuff.
That's quite something. That's very unusual though.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Ireland isn't known for an organized right wing.
No, it's not. And I'm hoping like, but this little solidarity thing went down because the week before they meet outside the post office on a Saturday at 3 o'clock or something. So and they gave some racist abuse to a friend of ours, so we went down to make sure that this doesn't happen again. And but on that particular day they'd had this big, they had already planned for a big march around in the just around the corner from there, you know, in the, not the courthouse, but the down by the keys, anyway.
From the main post office you talked about, like where the Easter Rising took place, the big historic one.
Yeah, that's where they meet on a Saturday at 3 o'clock. And then there wasn't that many of them, but they'd had a big thing planned for last Saturday, where they went round to... just around the corner. It's not a courthouse. It's a fucking just at the end of the keys, around the corner from the post office. And so we went. There was about 500 of them down there, and we went down and just luckily, like I say, they came running at us, you know. And then luckily enough, the guards got in between. So
yeah.
There you go.
Some occasions when you're happy about the cops being present.
You hate to admit it, but it's the truth.
Yeah, right.
I say, and this little story here that I'm doing at the moment, it's about a police arrest, and we stopped the water meters from coming in this country, and a lot of people got arrested throughout it. And but I mean, it's not like the police here aren't armed. They're not. It's not like they have their fucking knee on people's necks and are killing people. I mean, it can still be abusive and stuff like this. Anybody with power can still abuse it, but it's not on the level of America. Anyway, this story is called Water Meters, Relationships, and Breath. Annis was agitated as he rushed up Rathdown Road. He wanted to be at the North Circular Road entrance to Rathdown before the water meter lorries arrived. If they could just keep the lorries on the main road, the day would be easier. Annis had a pain on his chest as he rushed up the hill. A lifetime nicotine smoker, he was well aware that he was running in the overtime of his life game. There was no way of knowing how much overtime you got. And rushing up the Rathdown Road, he wondered if the final whistle might not be blown at any second. He had an image of himself collapsing, gasping for breath, just as he got in front of the Sierra workman. How pathetic would that be? And really, if it was going to be the last scene in his personal life story, is this where he wanted it to be played out? The corner of Rathdown on the North Circular Road? A Caribbean island might have been preferable. But no, that was just a lotto advertisement. In reality, he could have helped at the Grange Gorman squat garden. Acts of resistance against corporate domination didn't always have to be confrontational. There was a heap of manure arriving at Grange Gorman today. Manus figured it had to be good to make gardens, and he supposed it would be a fitting way to pass out. Or he could simply have stayed in bed. Surely that would be his preferred exit scene. Actually, a woman in his bed, Vera, fit and healthy too, but they didn't get on well. Just this morning they had fought. He hadn't been able to tell her exactly which corner he would be on or what time he would be back. She was petulant and he had got angry with her, then angry at himself for getting angry. He couldn't waste his life like that. Life would be clearer without such complications. Clearer, simpler, less complicated, yeah. He hadn't even got attached. Well, no, that wasn't quite true. He hadn't been attached, but she could be very loving towards him. And what kind of a fool threw away loving without thought? What kind of fool was he to even think of it? Who the hell else was ever again going to come over and do for him what she did? His mind and emotions contradicted themselves constantly. Clarity on the subject evaded him. He tried to focus on the job in hand. His chest hurt as he struggled up the hill. His heart pounded. It was an effort to force a half a breath full of air into his lungs. He abandoned using his nostrils and gulped at the air through his mouth. When he did manage to get a full breath, he was grateful. His nature seemed such that he seldom valued water till the well ran dry, or relationships till they were over, or his breath till he felt close to his last. The last few weeks of protest had been cold, hard days. Manus was tired trudging up the hill, tired and weary of the inevitable confrontation he was rushing towards. At the corner, he found that no other protesters had arrived yet. He phoned for help. Joanna was on her way with Graham and Jamesy. They were just getting ready and then walking up from the Grange Gorman squats. It would be less than a 10-minute walk for them. How long would it take them to get ready? Meanwhile, Annis was stood at the corner on his own. His stomach churned. He didn't want to be doing this on his own. And what could he do on his own? There were two unprotected corners. What was he supposed to do? Run between them? And here came a Sierra lorry. Manus got across the North Circular Road and just stood in front of the lorry before it got a chance to turn in. The driver looked pissed. The big truck could have just run him over, an insignificant lone figure. The driver looked like he would have if he could have got away with it. But this was still the wealthy West, where the citizenry still enjoyed the right to protest, and the driver was forced to drive on down the North Circular. And Manus got to walk back to the corner pavement. On his own, it was futile. Two trucks with trailers drove in at the next corner, and with a shake of his head and a shrug of his shoulders, Manus trotted off to do what he could. Manus knew the drivers. He had been battling with both of them before. One was Polish, the other from Donegal. The previous week, the Donegal man's swaggery and arrogance, along with his contempt for the protesters, had annoyed Manus. Manus had let his tires down, a childish prank. The Donegal man had to pump his tires back up at the end of his day's work. He now had a personal vendetta with Manus. Manus smiled his welcome when he approached Donegal. "Ach, sweetheart, could you not keep away from me?" Donegal scowled back. There was a small digger on the back of Donegal's trailer, and he let the ramp down to drive it off. Manus jumped onto the back of the trailer to stop the digger being driven anywhere. "You're trespassing my private property," Donegal said. Manus smiled and nodded. Donegal fumed a bit. Manus had his phone out. He pointed it at Donegal, making out that he was taking a video of anything that happened. Manus wasn't over familiar with the phone and kept accidentally flipping it into selfie mode. Fortunately, Donegal didn't know about Manus's ineptitude on the phone, and he did know about not being caught using violence on phone cameras, so he just fumed. Then he put the ramp back up and made to drive off. Manus jumped off the trailer as it drove away. Then Donegal stopped the truck and Manus jumped back on. Then Donegal started driving away again and Manus jumped off again. They played this little game a few times. Then the lorry was stopped and Manus was stood on the trailer facing the digger, trying to get through to some help on the phone, when Donegal came behind him and got his arm around Manus's neck and pulled him back. Caught between the digger and the ramp, Manus had no room to manoeuvre or defend himself. His spine was up against the ramp. It hurt. Donegal was spluttering something in his ear. There was an intimacy in the spluttering threats. "I'll break your fucking spine, you scummy wee shit." Joanna, Graham and James arrived. Donegal released his grip and Manus was able to stand. He rolled his shoulders, stretched his neck. Sean arrived. 5 protesters, 2 workers. Police phoned for help. Manus went back down the hill to see if he couldn't muster some support from the other squatters. Molly came to the window when he banged on it, looking like, "What the hell is this man banging at my window for?" It was only about 7:30 a.m. "We need help stopping the meters going in," Manus shouted. A couple of them had come out from her house the day before and stood for a couple of hours on the corner of the street to block the lorries. But nothing much had happened, and it had been cold and boring, and a concerted, sustained resistance wasn't a familiar concept. What could you do? People had lives to live and priorities to make. When he got back up the hill, the guards had arrived. 2 guards, 2 workers, 4 protesters stood in front of the workers. Manus nodded a hello to the guards. One nodded back. The other restrained himself. "Oh well, I guess we all have a job to do." Manus grinned and nodded at the assemblage. Then in a louder voice, he spoke to Donegal in Polish. "Now come on, yous. Did yous not hear the people? There was thousands of us on the streets. We don't want your meters." And one of their foremen, some of the security company called Guard X, arrived. The guards talked to the Guard X and the foreman. But when Manus approached asking for information, the guards quickly got back in their car. Joanna went and spoke to the Sierra foreman and came back and said, "I've just been talking to your man there in the white van, and he says it's all right. They're just going to pack up and go somewhere else." "You can't believe a word that fuck says," Manus said, exasperated a little. "Well, I don't know, do I?" Joanna turned on Manus. "This is just my second day out. We only came out to support you." Wordlessly, he pleaded. "I know, Joe. I know you're cold and tired and haven't had your breakfast and haven't even had the chance to toilet properly, but don't be turning on me. We need to stand together now." Graham got in between them. "Easy, Joe. It's not on, Manus. We're out for ourselves." And for a moment, it looked like Joe's wrath was going to pour out over Graham. Luckily, the Polish worker walking by made some snide comment as he nodded at Joe, and she turned and ran at him. "Don't you underestimate an Irish woman, you ignorant prick!" She was screaming in his face, arms and hands up, claws out. Polish was back in his truck, toot sweet, doors and window locked. After some time, a superintendent turned up. Manus went over to him with his phone out and camera on. He hoped it didn't switch back to selfie mode. On this occasion, it didn't. "Get away here and put that camera away," said Superintendent. "You have a right to be here and a right to film what happens," Manus said. Superintendent didn't like Manus's tone or accent. "Not the way you're behaving. You've done nothing wrong, and you're telling me to put away my camera? Why is that, sir?" The insolence in Manus's tone, the lack of respect for authority and uniform, was too much for Superintendent. He considered himself a patient man, but sometimes the ordinary population just got above itself. Incensed, Superintendent made a grab for Manus's phone. Surprised by the bluntness of the attack, Manus withdrew his arm. Superintendent and another cop grabbed him. Forced him back, forced him forward, forced him down, forced him up. Manus was a rag doll. He managed to throw his phone and Sean retrieved it and ran. Manus's hands were handcuffed behind his back, tight, and then a notch or two tighter. They manhandled him into a car. Superintendent got Manus's name and address and then tried to make some case for his actions. "You had no right to film me." "Sorry," said Manus. "I thought I did. I thought you were going to hit me with the phone." Manus made a wry face and said sorry again and shook his head. Even the super must have realised how non-creditable his excuse sounded. He started ranting a bit. "I don't approve of violence. I've never even raised my baton. I am a peaceful man." Manus was inclined to contradict Superintendent, but he wasn't sure how it was all going to play out. Manus didn't have too much faith in the judicial system protecting the rights of protesters against the rights of the corporations, their defenders, or their representatives. Besides, wasn't protecting the rich minority from the poor majority the core of what the laws were really about? But Manus knew enough to let him rant. Off a little steam, and when he was finished, Manus stated, "My name is Manus McManus." "Oh, we know your name all right," cut in the Superintendent. "Well, good," continued Manus. "Know my name. My name's Manus McManus, and if there's any cameras there today, you'll see who's a peaceful man." Super wasn't as confident and easy about it all as he should be. Cameras. Everybody had cameras these days. By the time they got to Mountjoy, the superintendent was saying that Manus was not going to be charged with anything. They would just run his name through the computer, and if he had no warrants on him, he would be free to go. The guard car drove in through the heavy wooden gates at the back of Mountjoy barracks. Manus's cuffs were taken off. In the secluded security of Mountjoy guard barracks, the superintendent sent the driver into the building ahead of him, while he stalled about the yard for a private word with Manus, man to man. Looking at Manus's ID photo, Super laughed that Manus had changed his hairstyle since the photo was taken. The photo showed him clean-shaved and short-haired. He now had longish hair and sideburns. "I get work as an extra. They like curly faces and long hair," Manus explained in good-humoured camaraderie. The sun was shining in the empty yard and the two stood in silence. "I suppose you'll say I'm a terrible bollocks as soon as you get out of here," said Super. Manus shrugged. He was in no position to talk straight with the man. He wondered if he really was going to be allowed to walk straight out. "You've been reasonable with me," Manus lied. Super had to put his head down and smile a bit at that. He was not a stupid man. I knew the word reasonable could not be applied to his behaviour that morning. In any event, Manus was not kept in Mountjoy. In front of his men, the superintendent stuck his hand out to Manus. "You're free to go," he said. Manus stuck his own hand out. "Does this mean I'm allowed to take pictures on the street?" he asked as they shook hands. There was an awkward silence then, and Manus moved through it to the door. That's my story for the day.
Yes. Yes. I mean, it's, I don't, you know, sometimes you don't know whether to laugh or cry or both, but yeah, you know, that's just fantastic. It reminds me of other times people, you know, pick their wallet out of their pockets and then they're accused of like, oh, you're going to throw it at me or something. You know, I thought it was a gun, you know, but yeah, they thought they were going to be attacked by the phone. That's a new twist. Yeah. Excellent. Thank you, Stephen.
Thanks a lot, Evan. See you next week and good luck.
See you. Solidarity. Yeah, you too. And Paul McKenna, are you there? Are you there? Let's see. I see your bookcase. Let's see. We're looking at Paul McKenna's bookcase. We could have a little analysis of the bookcase. But Paul may have gone off. We'll come back to Paul. We're going to see if Mike Marker is there. I mean, Mike, I see you looking at me, so I think you're there, and you are there. Hey, how are you holding up, Mike?
Excellent. Never better. That's what I always tell people. And, excellent. And David, you look pretty good.
I know, shaved
you,
my
you
head.
Changed the look, man.
Yeah, we got a razor.
Well, hopefully, when you're out in the streets, you know, somehow or another, you might be less recognizable. Somehow or another, you know, they might not pick you up because, you know, they're obviously looking for you. And,
I mean, you know, actually the new gear I got, I got a new helmet and, I kind of look like a cop, I think now when I like an undercover cop, especially with this haircut and the helmet. Now I'm kind of worried about like, maybe I should have some kind of anti-cop statement on the helmet to make sure I don't get attacked by anarchists. I'm kidding. Well,
No. I mean, the more I see about Portland, I mean, and I remember gigs I did there and, God. And I mean, I had an artist in residence job in Oregon, in Newport,
Newport, beautiful years. On
yeah,
the beach.
So I back in those days, I played for schools and I did a lot of mischief with the schools. I taught them Malvina Reynolds songs and then we did murals on the walls and I got thrown out of at least one school.
Thrown out?
Yeah, actually kicked out by the principal who heard this song that I was doing, and I talked to the kids about clear-cut logging. And
Newport, things. No, that
and,
wouldn't
and
go
Newport,
over.
You know, there's
not back then.
Yeah, Weyerhaeuser,
yeah.
big mill there, and the principal called me in his office, and he just said, "You are not to be in our school anymore. You are,
wow.
are full of propaganda, and I know what kind of environmentalist you are, and I am the real environmentalist." And then he showed me the photographs behind him of various animals that he had killed and the guns that he owned. Yeah.
Oh.
So he's a hunter. And I know. Anyway, those were glorious days. And I spent a lot of time in Portland. So man, you know, the whole country just has your heart. And the whole country is watching this. And people in Canada, especially, we're talking about it. And we just cannot believe how much this resembles the kinds of things that were going on in 1932 and 33 in Germany and in Europe, you know. So you guys are right in the thick of it. And it's just too, I couldn't write a song about it. It's just too intense right now. You know, eventually maybe. You're the kind of guy who can crank out a song just like, you know, the next
day. I wrote one called 1933 a couple of years ago, but now the New York Times is catching up with my astute analysis that Trump is a fascist.
Well, I have, you know, I mean, one of the things that we talk about here in Vancouver, because we're really trying to deal with right now the border and the COVID and you know, the virus and one of the main problems that the government seems to be having is getting the message across to millennials, younger generation. And I have seen this too. It's not everybody, but there's an alarming tendency that I think for a lot of young people who maybe have a lot of entitlement. Now, I'm Indigenous, and so I was brought up with my elders. I'm Arapaho from my mother's people. And for Steve, that means I have a status card. I can cross the border. Not right now. I wouldn't, because all of our reserves are in a state of lockdown, really, and very vulnerable. Our elders, we just lost a really important elder at Lummi two weeks ago, a great loss, and from the virus. And so young people who feel invincible, and then you talk to them about elders, and some of them are very responsive. I don't mean to cast everyone the same, but I asked at a folk festival, I asked a young band that were playing, and I just said, who are your elders? And they said, elders? Fuck that. We don't need elders. We got YouTube. We got technology. We don't need you. I can watch Doc Watson, and he's 10 times better than you. So why would I learn anything from you? And it was depressing for me to think about that, because for me, those people that I was fortunate enough to hang out with, the great folk singers and songwriters and artists and poets, and I mean, even the time I hanging out with Jim Page, I mean, I think of him as somebody who's at this point an elder and someone who has a lot of experience to offer young people, you know, and I'd like them to discover him and recognize the sort of influence. He's had a lot of influence on a lot of young people, and I don't mistake that, but it just seems to me as though there's a great need to remember our history and to remember our elders. And again, I've been so fortunate to be around some of the greatest folk singers in the world, and that's had a huge influence on me. I couldn't have learned any of this, what I learned from them, by watching a YouTube video. And so here's my old guitar. Now it sounds a little bit funky, right?
It sounds like it needs a fret job.
Sounds like your old radio, doesn't it? Really bad radio. So what I've done, I've taken a, you can see, there's a wire there that's threaded. It's kind of a funky electrical wire. And what it does is it turns the guitar into more of an African kind of sound, because African instruments and African musicians, they like buzzes and rattles and things like that. So I'm going to play a Pete Seeger song that I think when we look back on the history of race relations in America, and people really tried to have a conversation musically and artistically, Pete Seeger really stands out as one of those people that really tried to bridge all generations. You know, he was certainly an elder, and we thought of him that way. But he was also, for all of the younger people, he was their peer too. And he did spend a lot of time advising and helping young people develop as musicians. So here's a little tune and then a song. And I don't know if the song, it's an interesting song because it goes back to a time when we talked about brotherhood, and we talked about we're all one people. I published an article recently in a journal called The Tyee, which I'd really like you to look at, David. And it's called Two Dads, A Father's Day Story. And it's about racism and history, I suppose, but in a very, very personal way. So this is Pete's attempt to try and knit everything together. Thank you. know this language that I speak is part German, part Latin, and part Greek. Celtic and Arabic thrown in a heap, well amended by the man in the street. Choctaw gave us the word okay. Vamos is a word from Mexico, eh? And all of this is a hint, I suspect, of what comes next. I think that my whole world, soon mama, my whole world, soon mama, my whole world, soon gonna be get mixed up. I like Polish sausage, I like Spanish rice. Pizza pie is also nice. Corn and beans from the Indians here, all washed down by some German beer. Marco Polo traveled by camel and pony to bring to Italy the first macaroni. And you and I, as well as we're able, put it all on the table. I think that my whole world, soon mama, my whole world, soon mama, my whole world, soon gonna be getting mixed up. This doesn't mean that we'll all be the same. We'll have different faces and different names. Long live many different kinds of races. It's difference of opinion that makes horse races. Just remember the rule about rules, brother. What's right for one may be wrong for another. And take a tip from La Bella France. Vive la difference. I think that my whole world, soon mama, my whole wide world, soon mama, my whole world, soon mama gonna get mixed up. There were no red-headed Irishmen before the Vikings landed in Ireland. How many Romans had dark curly hair before they brought slaves from Africa? No race of man is completely pure, nor is any man's mind, and that's for sure. Winds blow the dust of every land, and so will man. I think that my whole world, soon mama, my whole wide world, soon mama, my whole world, soon mama gonna get mixed up. I think that my whole world, soon mama, my whole wide world, soon mama, my whole world, soon gonna be get mixed up.
Yeah, I love that guitar effect.
It's pretty funky, isn't it?
but it is.
Very sounds fun, like, you know? I mean, when really you think cool. about, I mean, songs like that, I think keeping them alive and keeping, I don't know if people are singing that song anymore. I think it's kind of gotten lost. You knew it, right?
Pete Seeger recorded it.
It's a famous song among folkies. But outside of that, I mean,
it wasn't one of its hits.
No. And I think, you know, with the right treatment, it's a kind of a cool song, you know, anyway.
Oh yeah. Yeah, definitely. Thank you, well, Mike.
Thanks for having me on again, David. And you're doing a great thing. And, you know, we all really appreciate it.
It's good fun.
So I know you appreciate us, but you know, we're trying to tell you that we appreciate you as well. So hang in there in Portland. All the best. We'll be watching and organizing elsewhere. And we send our solidarity to you. So see you next week.
Take care, Mike. See you next week. Excellent. And let's see what's happening in Paul McKenna's in front of Paul McKenna's bookshelf now. Hey, we got Paul in front of the bookshelf now. Hey, good to see you. How are you, sir?
I'm good. So,
what part of the world are you in now?
Corvallis.
Corvallis. Oh, you're we're neighbors. Excellent. Yeah. Somebody on the West Coast.
Yeah.
So, right. Any federal troops wandering around Corvallis in the past few days, or no?
No. If I've got all my brothers and sisters, I have four brothers and sisters on the East Coast, and they're all like emailing me, "Oh, give me the inside scoop here about hey, like I might as well be, you know, light years away because there's nothing happening down here that would give any indication that that's happening."
So, what have the march? Have there been Black Lives Matter related marches in Corvallis over the past few weeks, though?
Yeah, I mean, over the initial period after the George Floyd murder, there were, you know, four or five events. It's not like Portland where they're doing stuff every day. Mm-hmm. But I stopped getting local papers, right? So, I mean, you know, yeah. I'm kind of out of it, to tell you the truth. You know. I told my brothers and sisters, I said, well, I get most of my news from, you know, like New York Times and CNN. So like right. Seeing the same things that you are. So, but no, I pick up the Oregonian every now and then, anyway, so yeah, things are kind of quiet here in Corvallis, though we did have some actions, like, you know, my daughter lives in Eugene, so she keeps me posted on what's happening down there. So there's stuff happening in Eugene, but not like Portland.
Right.
So, anyway.
What you got for us today, Paul?
Well, I thought I'd share this song. I wrote it actually back in late March, or maybe it was early April, but it's still pretty appropriate. And it's a rewrite of Bob Dylan's Hard Rain's Gonna Fall. Okay. So I have to give myself a note here. I'm just going to do this a cappella. Oh, where have you been, my blue-eyed son? And where have you been, my darling young one? I've been to a country that's reeling in crisis, consumed by the spread of a deadly new virus, which now has invaded each state in the nation and is quickly expanding all over the planet. And it's a hard rain's gonna fall. And what did you see, my blue-eyed son? And what did you see, my darling young one? I saw an old woman who died from the virus, who struggled to breathe till she finally went under, who ended her life isolated from loved ones, unable to reach out and hold her grandchildren, alone and afraid in her life's final moments. And she was just one of the multitudes dying that are certain to grow by the hundreds of thousands. And it's a hard rain's gonna fall. And what did you hear, my blue-eyed son? And what did you hear, my darling young one? I heard the voice of a man who's an ignorant blowhard, obsessed with himself and his own public image, intent on evading the blame for his errors, who lies and misleads every time his mouth opens, who hasn't a clue how to feel true compassion, whose only concern is his own re-election, and keeping the stock market booming and growing, while the land is in desperate need of a leader. And it's a hard rain's gonna fall. And who did you meet, my blue-eyed son? And who did you meet, my darling young one? I met an Uber driver whose income had dried up, who had no idea how to make his rent payment, I met a young nurse without proper equipment, whose life was in danger just caring for patients. I met a grocery worker who feared for her safety, but stayed on the job because she needed the money. With no other way to provide for her family. I met a Chinese girl who'd been spit on and threatened by haters who blamed her for spreading contagion. And it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard rain's gonna fall. Oh, what'll you do now, my blue-eyed son? And what'll you do now, my darling young one? I'm staying at home with my wife and my family, observing the rules for containing the virus, playing video games with my son and my daughter, connecting online with my friends and co-workers, attending church services through my computer, or joining a Seder logged in on my laptop, and wearing a mask when I'm out in the public, staying 6 feet away from the folks I run into, collecting equipment for healthcare providers, and trying to laugh in the face of the crisis. And I'll pray from my heart for the health of the nation, but I'll back up my prayers with commitment to action, and I'll work till I drop to beat Trump in November. And it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard rain's gonna fall.
Thank you, Paul McKenna. And it's great to have a little participation from the West Coast. It's, we never get anybody from Oregon on this open mic, so glad you could join us.
Yeah, great.
Hope to see you again.
All right.
And then moving all the way across the country to Maine, Peter Patton, how are you holding up? You there, Peter? I hear you. I see you and I hear you. Can you hear me?
Can you hear me?
I think there's just like a big delay, though. What you got for us? I'll just
sort of.
But we can see you and hear you, so I'll just get off the screen and see what you got for us, if that's all right.
Well, I want to discuss this baseball. Can you hear that? We just started our baseball season in this country. And although I don't follow the games much, in recent times, I read how there's been more home runs in baseball and that it is because the baseballs are made more dense and the skins are thinner. So when ball gets hit, it travels further. Well, good. And I thought that this is before the pandemic that I read this. And I thought that maybe a hardball approach is what we need to fix our country. But baseball is also getting more strikeouts. And with more home runs and strikeouts, there's less in between. So baseball does reflect our country. There's more extremes on both sides and much less in between. So baseball and America currently have a lot in common. I'd like to make a comment about, seeing as how this is an election year, we have a lot of political posters out, of course. And until many of these posters, you know, there's a photograph of the person that the poster is supporting, and also a photograph of the opposition candidate. And that picture of the opposition is often done in black and white, shades of gray. The photographs are altered to give the picture less optimistic image, and the person quite often is given a scowl on the face, or some other gimmick is involved to make the person look less inviting. And while the candidate that the poster supports, of course, is done in real colors and a smiling face. But wouldn't this suggest that for the opposition being done and simple black and white shades to make him look like a bad choice, it would suggest that if that person is seen in real life and real colors, then that person must be okay. If the picture has to be altered in order to make them not look okay, I think we need to reform our campaigning in this country and be a little more mature and upfront, and reducing these photographs of the opposition to just shade to black and white. You know, I've been advised not to mention this, but wouldn't that suggest that could be a racist issue here if the shades of black and white are meant to be negative? We really need to improve our approach to politics in this country and what we want and demand from the candidates and from the campaigns. That's it for me for now. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Peter. Great to hear from you again. And we'll see you again. And that worked just fine, as long as we're not trying to converse with the 5-second delay. So thank you. Next, we are going to go to a far more densely populated part of the country with a better internet connection, New York City. Joel Landy.
Hello.
How are you holding up?
I'm doing all right. I mean, let's see. We have COVID-19. We have hurricane season just began, and eviction notices begin at the end of the week.
Have they started? There might be an extension on the federal ban, but no extension on the New York ban.
I don't know. I don't know mm-hmm. what the latest the changes. I do know that I'm going to be 65 in September. And because of that, I'll be able to get an accommodation and teach at home. So, you know, cheaper movie tickets and being able to teach at home. That's going to be my introduction tonight to being 65. So that's not terrible. But I am concerned if I teach in a Title I school, and if there are evictions, and if I'm teaching at home, who am I teaching?
Yeah. What homes are they in, if any?
Yeah. And I understand the Pentagon just released some information talking about UFOs. Now there's a distraction for you.
Maybe the aliens are going to come
save us. We're looking to the alien skies for a distraction at this point. Things are a little desperate in the White House.
Maybe things are bad enough on Earth that they finally come to save us.
I don't think they're going to be doing that. Anyway, I do like Peter's approach to baseball and the current situation. Could you think of anybody who's dense with a thin skin. But that's not why I came here to speak to you today. I wrote a verse about something going on that involved New York on Saturday, and I had to write a different verse on Sunday. It seems that the Yankees invited Donald Trump to throw out the first pitch August 15th in a baseball game. You know, take me out to the ball game. I'll be there with no crowd. Won't hear the booing at homes on TV. Painted faces on seats will be laughing at me. If I don't win the election, someone else is to blame. You can vote, shout, but you can't get me out of my hell of fame. But then on Sunday, they backed out. So I had to write another verse about I won't be coming to New York to be the star of the team. And it ends in martial law, you know, but, you know, send more feds to the cities if that doesn't work. But that's not why I came here today. I want to talk to you about the schools, and I'm sitting on this one for a day to see if any other changes or any other verses come to mind before I post it on the UFT, New Utrecht High School website. And you can sing along. I cannot teach your children when I'm dead. When I'm dead. No, I cannot teach your children when I'm dead. Oh, I would be a fool going to an unsafe school. No, I cannot teach your children when I'm there. Your child can't poison relatives at home. Interacting with the others when she's gone. Kissing grandma on the cheek can mean the end of her next week. Oh, your child can poison relatives at home. To travel is another danger zone. When a child is on the go and on their own. If they should buy things in a store, we increase the risk some more. Not to mention trains and buses coming home. Ventilation will remain a mystery. Can you know about those things you cannot see? Passing students in the hall may not be safe at all. These invisibles are the scariest for me. We'll be closing all the businesses again. If they should open too soon, well then, it could be the final blow for mom and pop shops that you know if we have to close the businesses again. The politicos will offer thoughts and prayers, saying sorry for the pain that isn't theirs and the suffering we feel. For them will not be real, as politicos will offer thoughts and prayers. So let's be smart and do the right thing. Saving lives and the economy's one thing. It makes more sense to wait than to contaminate. Let's be smart and then do the right thing. Yeah. You know, I cannot teach your children when I'm dead. No, I cannot teach your children when I'm dead. We would be the fool going to an unsafe school. I'll repeat myself if you can't hear what I said. I said, we cannot teach your children if we're dead.
Excellent, excellent. Putting that wonderful slogan into a song. That's great.
I was inspired by that Scottish song, You Can't You Throw Your Granny Off a Bus, right?
Oh, I don't know that one.
Yeah, that was introduced to me by Eric Levine years ago, and it resonated. And I was just at my mother's before, because she's 93 and it's a very hot day. I went out there to make sure everything's okay. She's not eating. Boy, that's 180 degrees from when I was a kid.
She's not not eating.
Anyway, yeah. Gotta make sure that you put some nutrients.
You have to help her eat, the other way around. Once upon a time,
and driving past the firehouse next to where she lives, there was an electronic billboard, and it said, "Put on a clothy face." So next week, maybe I'll be singing, Corona is gonna rise up, put on a clothy face. It's about time you wise. I'll work on it. We'll get there.
Good. Yeah. More mask songs. Excellent.
Yeah.
Thank you, Joel.
Always something new.
Good. Yes.
Bye-bye.
And staying within the northeastern USA, Pat LaManna. I think your mic is muted, perhaps.
Not
great
anymore.
Great to see you. How are
Good
you holding
to see
up?
You, David. Great. Actually, we were just in Maine last week. We spent a few days there. Beautiful southern Maine, not that rural, but
relatively unpopulated compared to many places. Anyway.
And New York and New England, Knockwood, we're kind of coming out of this, hopefully. Mm. Now, whether that'll remain when people come from other states.
Yeah, because it's all one country, and then the I-95 corridor is where so many of the outbreaks are, up and down from Florida up to Maine.
Mm-hmm. And our governor says if you come from certain states, you have to quarantine yourself for 2 weeks, but how in the heck can you enforce that?
Yeah, who's going to actually enforce it, right?
Right, So how are you holding up in Portland?
Yeah, well, it's a very interesting place to be. It's not boring.
Are you going to the demonstrations every night?
Not every night, no, but I was there a couple nights ago. I've been to some of them. And I haven't stuck around late enough to catch all the tear gas, but there's a wonderful crowd the other night, thousands of people. Just while I was there, there were still thousands pouring in from all over the city. It was really quite something. You leave the protest area and there's nobody around. The streets are dead, pandemic dead,
So the people that are doing the violence and setting the fires and all that, are they the protesters? Are they, sent in by the Trump administration to give them an excuse to bring in the feds or something in between?
Well, I mean, definitely there's a tactic of people in like with the CHOP in Seattle. There are people with the aspiration of taking over the building and occupying it, defunding the police and doing that by taking over the police station and the courts. It's a long-standing tactic, closing down courts and taking them over. And it's very militant for sure. But the violence is when when the authorities defend the building rather than letting the people take it. It's just a building. But they would rather kill people than let people take the building, In other parts of the world, they would let people take the building, but of course it's a big deal to take a building over. That's even if it's run by a white supremacist organization, we call the police department in a state founded on white supremacy. So I don't know where the violence has come from, but it's the police are the ones being violent. People are trying to tear down the fence, and then they get attacked for it, or marching. But usually they're getting attacked for just walking in the streets. Most basic form of civil disobedience is walking down the street, marching in the streets. That's considered an act that needs to be, attacked. So it just, it creates a cycle.
Yeah, well, right. It does, because supposedly the demonstrations were calming down until the feds came in. And then,
I don't know if that was necessarily true, but it was definitely a calm few days anyway. Whether that was going to be a trend or not, I think was too early to predict. But that's quite possible. And certainly way more people in the streets now. I mean, it's like soon after George Floyd was killed again, it's like thousands, not hundreds.
Well, so speaking of that.
Yeah, you got a song somewhere in this related to this subject matter?
Pretty much, yeah. And yet another song based on a 1960s protest song. So,
excellent.
Like Hard Rain, but this is by a contemporary of Dylan. And I don't think I'm even going to say the original song, because hopefully I know you'll get it, and hopefully your listeners will as well. So contemporary take on an old song. I marched down to Washington in 1963 and again in 1964. When I heard the words of Dr. King, a voice in me began to sing, I'll march till I can't march anymore. I marched in Manhattan to Dag Hammarskjöld Square to end the Indochina War. With Paxton Oaks and Seeger, I knew that I was eager to march till I can't march anymore. Now I walk a little slower, my hair is turning gray, but still I carry on. I do a little something each and every day, 'cause I can't do it when I'm gone. I marched to save our planet, I marched for women's rights, I marched for sensible gun laws. And yes, I marched with pride, straight and gay, side by side, and I'll march till I can't march anymore. I marched when the children were sent away and caged, when Muslims were banished from our shore. When George Floyd's life was shattered, I cried out, Black Lives Matter, and I'll march till I can't march anymore. Now I walk a little slower, my hair is turning gray, but still I carry on. I do a little something each and every day, 'cause I can't do it when I'm gone. Now protesters are kidnapped by armed men in unmarked cars. They're not even telling them what for. Our democracy's in trouble, so my efforts I must double, and I'll march like I never marched before. And I'll march till I can't march anymore.
Lovely, Pat. Lamanna, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for what you're doing. This is just great.
It is even greater when you join us. So I hope to see you back again soon.
I hope so. You too, David. Bye-bye.
Bye. And this concludes the 14th weekly Pandemic Open Mic Monday. Please feel free to join a future one. It's every Monday. You can sign up at davidrovics.com/POMM. Then you'll receive weekly notifications by email about the coming up open mic that day, and then you can join if you can. And it just tends to work out well that way without needing to have a specific sign-up sheet for each week and all that. So hope to see some newcomers for a future one, and also the familiar folks that have been joining us on fairly regular, sometimes weekly basis. I'll be doing broadcasts right here on whatever platform you're watching on for the rest of the week. This week, tomorrow, I'll be the hosting, as I do every Tuesday, Fifth Estate Live. And then on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday this week, probably all those days, I'll be interviewing various folks for my Discussions with David series that I've been doing during the pandemic. And that's pretty much always at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. GMT, as this open mic was. And then on the last Saturday of every month, I'm starting a new tradition, which I began last Saturday, of doing a concert at 1 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. GMT, on the last Saturday of every month. And yeah. There you go. So hope to see you here in cyberspace, out in the streets of Portland, and wherever else. Good luck. Don't pay the rent. Mutual aid will get us through. Take care. Talk to you soon. Bye for now.